thanks very much. And thanks very much for the opportunity to come here and show you some things we've been doing recently to try to look at the extent to which mechanical properties of tissues in general and central nervous tissues in particular, whether that quantity, the stiffness of the material, is a quantity that's of interest to the cells for deciding their phenotype. And it turns out that this can be a very large influence on many cell types, including neurons and astrocytes, and I'll show you some examples of that. So the kind of questions I want to answer are, as I said, whether stiffness or viscoelasticity is a relevant biological control point, and it certainly seems to be, and it manifests itself, at least in this system, in this very interesting interplay between neurons and glial cells in general, I believe, but astrocytes in particular, in that at least cortical brain neurons and motor neurons have almost the opposite response to increasing stiffness as do glial cells. And I'll show you the examples that, in the simplest system in which we culture these things in a two-dimensional environment on substrate, flat substrates that are soft, and then see if we can recapitulate these results if we put them in a soft 3D environment that's slightly closer to the matrix in which they might live, and then see whether those kinds of lessons are at all useful in trying to design materials that might be useful in vivo, in our context, for wound healing. And in the end, if there's time, I want to speculate a little bit or show you some very kind of preliminary experiments to try to get a handle of how cells sense stiffness, because it's a surprisingly enigmatic problem. The cells do turn out to be extremely good rheometers of some sort, and they're very sensitive to material properties. And how they do that is pretty much unknown. So the work I'm going to show you is largely done by students and postdocs in the lab at Penn now. Qi Wen and Jeff Byfield have, and together with Ilya Leventhal, who's now in Dresden, have done a lot of the mechanical measurements. And Jessamyn Weiner and Penelope Georges have worked on the morphologic change in the cells as they interface with these different materials. So here's kind of the starting point. Here's sort of a very oversimplified summary of data basically culled from the literature in which people have measured the elastic modulus of different organs. And I've kind of renormalized a lot of data to convert Young's moduli to shear moduli, just because this is the geometry of deformation that I'm going to show you some examples of. And it's very important that one oversimplification is that these data are all taken from experiments in which the strain is on the order of a few percent, so possibly in the linear range, and on a time scale of about a second or a hertz. And if you make such a kind of scan through the literature, there's a fairly broad range, but surprisingly well-conserved physical quantities ranging from the softest sorts of things, like a normal lymph node, or visceral fat, at least at body temperature, the bone marrow, the softest of all tissues, and brain is not far below. And other tissues, of course, muscles are much stiffer, cartilage is up through the, almost to the ceiling, bone is up on the roof somewhere, even on a logarithmic scale. So this is a very broad range of elastic moduli, but most soft organs are somewhere in this kind of 100 to 10,000, 50,000 or so Pascal. And it's a very well-conserved quantity. What I can't show you, because I can't find enough data, are variances of different people's measurements if you compare tissues from the same animal, the same age, the same state of health. But if you just do multiple measurements of different animals in the same laboratory setting, the variance of these stiffnesses is actually very small, on the order of about 15%. And during disease development, and in particular we've been looking a little bit at the development of fibrosis in the liver of course stiffens up approximately an order of magnitude in some liver tumors that develop subsequent to fibrosis are also even stiffer. So this is of course a useful quantity to detect a stiffening, and we already heard a few examples yesterday of the importance of looking at the stiffness of tissues during tumor development. And one of the most striking examples, of course, is development of tumors in the breast and the transition from the stiffness of a normal mammary gland to either pre-malignancy or full-blown tumors is very large, obviously. And so we've been looking at why these stiffnesses do seem to be well controlled, and is that simply a consequence of the work that the cells and the extracellular matrix need to do, or is it actually something that is biologically useful? So let me point out a couple of very serious complications or things that do need to be taken into account, at least to some extent. And some of this really messes up modeling, but some of it does not. So the main complications in measuring either in vivo or just taking a piece of tissue out and putting it in an instrument is that typically we measure sort of macroscopic millimeter to centimeter sized objects, and so we've smeared over any spatial heterogeneity, which might be important on a cellular level, but as I'll show you later, it's actually unclear what length scale of tissue stiffness cells actually care about. There's also a very strong time dependence to all these measurements. And even the shear modulus of most tissues is very sensitive to how much that tissue is compressed, often in a way that is not really obvious from just considering a continuum sort of soft elastic material or a soft viscoelastic material. I'll show you one example from measurements in the brain that might be relevant. And in particular, one of the things our lab has been, and others have been really interested in is that almost all of the ingredients that go into making a viscoelastic tissue, that is the polymer networks of the extracellular matrix and the polymer networks that make up the cytoskeleton, all of these polymers are of this so-called semi-flexible class of cross-linked polymers that all show a remarkably large nonlinearity. So as long as the networks are cross-linked and isotropic and not broken, they're very, very strongly strain stiffening. And beyond some yield stress, they become strain softening in a fairly dramatic way at large strains. But at small strains, they're actually remarkably stiffening. So here's a couple of examples of at least of heterogeneity. Here's a measurement that we've been doing with a very small needle microprobe, about a 200 micron long needle that works wonderfully as a simple compression rheometric device. And if you take a developing tumor in a mouse mammary tissue and probe the area far away from what looks histologically like a malignant tissue, you get a relatively low modulus. If you poke right on the premalignant area itself, it's noticeably and clearly two or three times stiffer. And even the area adjacent to it, so maybe 100 microns or a few hundred microns away from things that from staining would look malignant, are possibly noticeably stiffer, but in particular the variance of these measurements actually gets to be slightly bigger than it is in the normal. So poking over a small, at least hundreds of micron scale size of the tissue is probably a relevant length scale over which to measure, but usually the heterogeneities are not enormous. They're sort of factor of two, factor of three. Again, measuring things in about a few percent strain and on a time scale on the order of a second. But of course, many of these things are tissues are very strongly time dependent. And here's a stress relaxation measurement of a piece of rat brain it's ex vivo, but it's relatively recently ex vivo, and these things show this enormous stress relaxation here on a logarithmic scale. Eventually, this does plateau to what looks like a steady infinite elastic modulus, so very similar to what we saw yesterday of a few hundred pascal. But at short times, it stiffens up a lot, and I think some of the data we saw yesterday at sort of 100 hertz, or if you convert it to radians per second, back here someplace, I'll show you later that this gets up into the kilohertz range. But there's a very, very strong relaxation of stresses in these tissues, and when cells are pulling on the matrix or on their neighboring cells, they're experiencing this kind of time-dependent resistance. And that gives us some information about the time scale over which cells are manipulating their environment and trying to respond. So here's what I mentioned about the compression. So this is probably relevant to a lot of data in which people have taken tissue samples and measured them in vitro in a typical Conant plate or parallel plate rheometer. In order to do that, you almost always have to put a normal force on the tissue to keep it from sliding. Either that or you glue the tissue onto the plates and then deform the sample in shear strain. But it's especially from these data we saw from the Margulies lab yesterday. She's actually, her lab is across the way from mine. They typically put the sample in between two plates or in some kind of measurement device and then then compress it a few percent in order to keep it from sliding out, and then do a small strain oscillatory measurement. And this has some impact on the shear modulus that you measure. So here's an example in which we've taken, again, a slice of brain, measured at about 1 radian per second, 1% shear strain, and if we just glue it to the plates, we get an elastic modulus, in this case, of about 300 or so pascal. If we now compress it, 5%, 10%, up to 20%, modulus goes way up. And the time dependence of the stress relaxation changes as well. And this might have some impact in what effective stiffness a piece of tissue has when it's held under different pressures. This isn't exactly a pressure because we've just compressed it in one dimension, but it's done so quickly that the volume is not changing and it's possibly approximating a pressure. So what we typically see with these soft tissues is that under compression, they become stiffer. Under extension, they don't. They maintain some relatively similar modulus if you stretch them. So the origin of that, I think we don't understand, and we don't yet know how to relate it to the architecture of the tissue in there, but it's a fairly common observation. And I'm going to quickly gloss over this, but it is an important thing to eventually, if we want to try to understand how the ingredients in the tissue give rise to the tissue stiffness, we're going to have to come to grips with this very strong stiffening of almost everything that's in these tissues. So the cytoskeletal filaments, actin filaments and intermediate filaments, vimentin or neurofilaments, all have this wonderful property that at small shear strains, cross-linked networks of these polymers are quite soft, and the more you strain it, the stiffer they get. And they get a lot stiffer, orders of magnitude stiffer at large strains, but not terribly large, on the order of 10% or so, depending on, intermediate filaments may be more because they're softer. And the physics of this, of where this comes from, is fairly well explained by considering the thermal fluctuations or of soft polymers or the difference in the resistance to bending and stretching of stiffer polymers. But it's also true of the polymers in the extracellular matrix, at least collagen 1 fibers and fibrin fibers. Fibrin will be interesting, relevant later because we're trying to use fibrin as a soft matrix for wound healing. But these things also have this stiffening response. So this is not necessarily something we see in the tissue. Tissues don't strain stiffen as remarkably as do the cross-linked networks within them. But that's for many, many reasons, one of which is that one of the consequences of being strain stiffening, as opposed to being perfectly linear like polyacrylamide gels or most simple hydrogels, one of the features of this property that cells seem to exploit is that if they apply internal tension within the cytoskeleton, for example, by activating motors, that's equivalent to putting an internal strain on the network, and the cell simply rides up the strain stiffening curve. So cells are exquisitely able to tune their stiffness locally, not by polymerizing more material or cross-linking it more, but by activating motors that put in an internal stress. If they do that, they can stiffen up their cortex quite a lot, and if they tug on the extracellular matrix, they can also stiffen it up quite a lot. And I don't have time to show you the data, but we have quite a few experiments recently in which we've looked at the stiffness of an extracellular matrix by atomic force microscopy near or far away from a cell that's actually actively contracting it. And tens of microns away from the contracting cell, the extracellular matrix is considerably stiffer than it is far away because the cell has ridden up on this strain stiffening curve. As soon as you poison the motors or release the integrins from the extracellular matrix, The network relaxes, the modulus goes back down, the network sort of shrinks again, or expands in this case. Okay, so that's more in the kind of realm of background, but here's how cells, or an example of how cells respond to changes in stiffness. So here are some experiments that were really, really started about 10, 15 years ago now by Pelham and Wang. And here's our lab's version of their experiment, which is really simple, to make polyacrylamide gel, so simple, very simple, beautifully elastic, no-loss hydrogels with very sensitively tunable shear moduli, on top of which we can coat various adhesion proteins so we can ligate the cells to the surface through whichever transmembrane protein we choose. In this case, it's the fibronectin receptor. And if you do that, if you take cells and put them on gels that are soft, so soft here meaning about a kilopascal, for fibroblasts this is very soft, and just increase the stiffness of the matrix, but leave the chemistry completely the same. The adhesion molecules are all the same, equally adhesive surfaces, same culture medium, the cells undergo this beautiful morphologic change, going from relatively round and kind of nasty looking, but quite healthy. The cells will divide, there's nothing wrong with these cells. It's only when you make them in the unphysiologically stiff range, so hundreds of kilopascals, or if you put them on glass, then they develop this beautiful fan-shaped morphology that you're used to seeing from textbooks and beautiful actin stress fibers. But under relatively closer normal physiologic conditions, they don't have these objects. They look more like this. And if we now measure the cell's own stiffness by gently indenting the cortical surface a few hundred nanometers and compare the cell stiffness to the matrix stiffness below it, it looks as though the cell stiffness is trying to follow the matrix stiffness as far as it can go. Eventually, the cell runs out of mechanisms to stiffen itself, and that, for fibroblasts, that seems to saturate at about 8 kilopascal. And you can make the matrix as rigid as you want, but in this kind of physiologically relevant range of a few thousand pascal shear modulus, the cell is tuning its stiffness to match the substrate. So it's relatively rapidly reversible. It seems to be something the cell is quite interested in doing. And many cell types have now been characterized to do this transition from going from round and relatively amorphous on soft substrates to spread out and highly articulated on rigid substrates. The big exception is neurons. Neurons do exactly the opposite. So these are our embryonic rat cortical neurons. Plated on exactly the same kind of experiment, but now on quite soft gels, 150 pascal polyacrylamide gels coated with laminin. Here the cells, after 3 or 4 days in culture, extend these very long neurites, much longer than the image can show you. The scale bar is about 15 microns. And at the ends of these long neurons, the red stain is for microtubules, the green stain is for actin. This is the growth cone that emanates from these from these neurites. They extend these neurites very robustly, and they branch quite frequently, and it's a relatively healthy-looking neuron quite quickly all by itself. There's glial conditioned medium, but they don't have to be touching a glial cell to do this. As you make the matrix stiffer, the cells are still alive, and they will still extend processes, but they do it somewhat more reluctantly, and they branch less frequently, and there are fewer and smaller growth cones. Until we get to about 11 kilopascal, there's usually only one long protrusion, very few branches. So this is the opposite of what astrocytes do. If you put an astrocyte on a very soft matrix coated with everything it could want, collagen, laminin, it doesn't seem to make much difference. They will always stay round. And what's particularly interesting, they and other cell types like hepatic stellate cells, to which they're distantly related, don't respond to activating signals very well at all as long as they're sitting on these soft materials. If you make the material stiffer, 10,000 pascal, they spontaneously activate and start becoming aster-like. We haven't done anything chemically to them. It's the same culture medium. It's the same dish. It's just a piece of the gel that's stiff, and this is a piece of the cell that is a gel that is soft. And I want to look at a little bit in more detail at this transition of astrocytes, because it's a quite a graded response. And so if we look at some metric like the spread area of the astrocytes or their circularity, there are two things I think that are potentially interesting from this. One is that the matrix stiffness range over which the astrocytes respond goes from a few hundred pascal to maybe the something is either optimized or saturated at a couple thousand pascal. And this is a fairly cell type specific response. Fibroblasts would see this entire stiffness range as soft. They would stay round over this whole thing. But astrocytes are very interested in this very soft range of stiffness. And other cell types that come from stiffer tissues, chondrocytes, osteocytes, they don't care about this stiffness. They're much more interested in this tens of kilopascal stiffness to begin to spread. And this response, and inevitably there are large variances because there's a mixed cell population here, but we don't control the starting point of the cell in any way. These are just primary cells passaged a few times. There seems to be an optimum in both the spread area and a minimum in the circularity that happens in this sort of intermediate stiffness range. If we put the astrocytes on something infinitely stiff for them, like glass, they actually make fewer protrusions. They look more polygonal and less astro-like. So some of these stiffness cues don't seem to be monotonically signaling, but seem to have an optimum, and that's been seen in several cell types. It's not only sort of morphology, but there's also many transcriptional programs that are, or protein expression programs, I should say, that are turned on or turned off by stiffness. Here, Penelope has just stained the cells for glial fibrillary acidic protein, or vimentin, two different kinds of intermediate filaments that astrocytes make. And the interesting thing, there is a surprising thing from my point of view. What's not surprising is that on soft materials, the intermediate filament system, which is usually beautifully articulated and goes throughout the cell, seems very amorphous. And it's because the intermediate filaments no longer fully assemble. They're still there, but they're poorly assembled. And although, again, the cell is okay. But what's also kind of interesting is that there seems to be a switch in which class of intermediate filaments the cell expresses. On very soft materials, it's making GFAP and not much vimentin. These are Western blots. On rigid materials, it switches. It downregulates GFAP and it upregulates vimentin for reasons which are obscure, but it's a fairly reproducible and striking result. So two things, the protein expression is dependent, and certainly the way the cytoskeleton is formed depends a lot on stiffness. And it does raise the interesting point of which one of these pictures is actually biologically more relevant to a resting cell. We expect always to see things like cytoskeletal fibers beautifully formed because we're mostly looking at cells that are cultured on glass or plastic. But it's conceivable that in the physiologic state, under resting conditions, there's a large reservoir of non-assembled cytoskeleton that is there to be engaged if some transition happens. I'm going to skip over this because it just shows you what I showed you. So what we've been interested in doing is looking at this interplay between neurons. So here's a graph of the extent of neurite branching as a function of substrate stiffness. It plummets once we get to this several thousand pascal range. And astrocyte activation is measured by becoming stellate looking, and that rises over this same range. So we thought that if there is a material we can find that is biocompatible, that is approximately in this stiffness range, this might promote not only the survival, but the growth of neurites or recovery of axons into parts of a damaged central nervous system, and it would cool off. It wouldn't harm the astrocytes, but it would cool off their activation, partly by putting them in the softer matrix and because astrocytes in a softer matrix are somewhat less susceptible to activation by chemical stimuli. And the so there are two potential things to do. One is to take a fake material like polyacrylamide and see what happens if we take mixed cultures. From looking at individual cell types, it looks like neurons in some sense like soft stuff, don't like hard stuff, and astrocytes are exactly the other way around. So what happens when we put a mixed culture? In this case, it's the whole preparation from the embryonic cortex. So it's everything that's in there, plated down, in this case, on a very soft gel that's coated with laminin. And 4 or 5 days later, if you stain the what's sitting on top of the gel, it's almost entirely neurons, stained by a red secondary antibody to NFH, phospho-NFH, which should only stain neurons and not other cells. Pretty much the only thing we see are neurons. If we stain with a green antibody to GFAP, which should stain specifically astrocytes, we don't see anything. Even though when we plated the stuff down on the gel, most of what was there were glial cells. There are glia living on the plastic around this gel, but they're not on the gel anymore. If we do the same, exactly the same experiment, same prep, same everything, but put it on a hard gel, and not that hard, 10 kilopascal or so, mostly what we see are these really, really photogenic astrocytes. There are still neurons. There are red stained neurons on there, but they're sitting on top of the astrocytes. They're not sitting on top of the gel. If they have a choice, they'll sit on top of the astrocytes because, we think, at least in part, the astrocytes are softer than the gel underneath them. So that seems to be relatively a relatively strong effect. We can very, very much tune which cell type predominates by changing the matrix stiffness. So the question is whether if what works in 2D, is it fundamentally different in 3D? And can we recapitulate some of these things in a biocompatible material? Because what we'd like to do is to use this to control function and potentially proliferation in vivo. And what we've chosen to work on is fibrin because it's very a nice material to get in this very soft range. Now I'll show you the results first. And it works actually quite well. Here's exactly the same experiment, but now instead of placing these cortical preparations on top of a polyacrylamide gel, we've embedded them in a three-dimensional fibrin gel. And again, several days later, most of what is inside the gel or on the surface, or we can image it better, are green-stained astrocytes, if the gel is relatively stiff, thousands of pascal. And it's probably even stiffer than this because the number I'm reporting is the low strain modulus. But remember that fibrin, unlike polyacrylamide, strain stiffens. So if the cells are pulling on it and straining it, they feel an even stiffer environment than we measured at low strain. So mostly what we see as astrocytes. If we just decrease the fibrin concentration to make the networks softer and softer, we see a lot of increase in red stain neurons. And by the time we get to 300 pascal or so, we see this nice interplay of astrocytes and neurons, and we start seeing what looks like potentially axons fasciculating and so forth. So there is some potential that in 3D these same things play out. And in vivo, there's also a hint that there's some reality to it. My colleague Lisa Flanagan at UC Irvine has been taking these materials and putting them in spinal cord injuries, and we've done a little work with Dave Meany in brain injury at Penn as well, and the results are roughly similar. So Flanagan's experiment is to do a little hemisection injury in a rat's spinal cord, which if just left alone would create this glial scar at the boundary of where you cut stuff out, and neurons would never get in here. This the glia would proliferate, put down artificially stiff extracellular matrix, and bad things would happen. So she has filled in this space with a gel of fibrin. It's not populated with cells, it's just the soft gel. And 7 days or so after the injury has been taken, if you stain this material now, the green stain is for astrocytes, the red stain is for fibrin. In fact, it's salmon fibrin. The trick doesn't work with human fibrin or any mammalian fibrin. It works wonderfully with fish fibrin for reasons which we partly think we understand that have to do with the resistance of fish fibrin to degradation by mammalian proteases because the human fibrin would degrade in this injury site within less than a day, and the fish fibrin sticks around longer. It's also less inflammatory. So anyway, the upshot is that this red stain is the remaining, this is a blow up of what I show up above, it's the remaining clot that was inside this little carved out area of the spinal cord. And the blue stain is for nuclei, so presumably neurons as well as glial cells. But the green stain is for astrocytes. And astrocytes have not proliferated and penetrated into this wound area the way that they would have had we not filled it with a gel. And if we look now, or if Lisa looks now caudal to this injury site for markers of reformation of synapses, in the control where we don't do anything, there's very little regrowth, or very little appearance of neurons downstream of this injury. If we treat with human fibrin, the situation, if anything, is worse. But if we fill the space with fish fibrin, it actually looks somewhat promising. And the animals do regain a little bit of function, and in particular, their survival is very much enhanced. This is a nasty enough injury that there's quite a bit of death from it days or weeks later in the control experiment. If you're treated with fibrin, there doesn't seem to be any death in a relatively large pool, maybe on the order of 20 animals in each set. So there seems to be something to it. So I want to finish with a couple of sort of speculations about how cells sense stiffness, because this it's really unclear. There are many, not many, but there's a handful of proteins which can be mutated that destroy this ability. So clearly, if you mutate certain integrins or certain cytoskeletons, the cells no longer respond to stiffness. But that doesn't necessarily tell us that that's the sensor of the stiffness. It's just something that has to do with the response to stiffness. So we've looked at sort of the physical features that cells seem to be interested in. And in particular, we've looked at the range of elastic moduli to which different cell types can respond. And it seems to vary from about 100 Pascal to about 100,000 Pascal. Once material is stiffer than this, I don't think cells can tell the difference. But where in this range cells are most sensitive to depends very much on the cell type. It depends what tissue the cell came from, and in particular, it depends a lot on whether it's an early passage primary cell or a cultured cell line that has grown up to live on plastic. So in order to be sensitive to stiffness, the cell must deform its matrix and do some kind of stress strain measurement of some sort. And we have relatively little information, although a little bit, about how much cells deform their matrix before they decide hard and soft, how large an area are they probing before they make that decision, and how long do they integrate the signal until they commit themselves to some response. We also don't know whether the cells, if they operate analogous to a rheometer, do they control the stress and measure the strain, or do they control the strain and measure the stress, or do they do something completely different? We also don't really know whether they're making static measurements or dynamic measurements. It seems as though they're making dynamic measurements, but that's still quite unclear. So I'll show you a couple of bits in the last minute or so of hints of what happens. So I mentioned that the change that we see in the morphology of neurons or astrocytes, or their preference for different materials, what we saw on soft linear polyacrylamide gels, we saw a very similar thing on nonlinear fibrin gels. And the rationalization for why that might be is if we take a fibrin gel that is soft at low strain, stiff at high strain, and compare it to a linear polyacrylamide gel, if the cell type doesn't pull very much, doesn't put a very large strain on the material, it'll see both matrices as soft. So by the relatively good outcome of looking at astrocytes and neurons, we made the mistake of looking at human mesenchymal stem cells to see if we could, where also you, if you make the matrix very soft, you can prevent their proliferation and nudge them into different differentiation states. But in this case, what we saw with polyacrylamide was completely different from what we saw with soft fibrin gels. And it's because these cells are much more, they're much hardier, they're much stronger, they're huge, they have lots of motors in them, and they deform the matrix a lot. And if you deform the matrix a lot, then the cell can really tell the difference between a strained stiffening material and one that is not. So at least that's some rationalization that, neurons and astrocytes, but not MSCs, deform the matrix a little, on the order of maybe a few percent. But other cell types deform the matrix a lot, and that seems to matter. So I want to show you a couple of things also done with mesenchymal stem cells, not exactly neuronal related, but it's at the moment the best handle of trying to understand mechanisms of stiffness sensing. So just like I showed you on fibroblasts, these cells also undergo this. They tune their own stiffness to respond to gel stiffness, but they do it over a very large range. So they're somehow changing their morphology. They can tune, they can look at about three orders of magnitude substrate stiffness and change their own stiffness in a kind of a biphasic way. And there have been a lot of speculations that maybe it's not really the stiffness of the matrix that cells are responding to, because whenever we change matrix stiffness, we're changing something, mesh size or protein concentration or potentially the way that solutes can percolate through the network or something. Or that the really relevant thing to determine the cell phenotype and the transcription program isn't really the cell is the substrate stiffness, but the shape of the cell that substrate forces it to take. And in order to address that issue, we've been doing some things with Chris Chen, who has this beautiful paper in Nature Methods now, where they have made soft deformable materials not by making hydrogels, but by making different long pillars made out of polydimethyl silane. So PDMS is itself relatively rigid, hundreds of kilopascal. But you can form it into these little needles, and the needles can be short or they can be long. And so typically in one of these little microfabricated arrays, the needles are about 2 microns in diameter, and they're anywhere from a few microns to about 15 or so microns tall. And they're usually spaced about 5 or 10 microns apart from each other. So it's a little bed of nails that are either short or long. And the beautiful thing about this is that what the cell sees when it comes down on it is identical. There's no way it can tell whether it's a tall or a short post. All it sees is PDMS islands underneath it. But the resistance to shear deformation, of course, is hugely altered by whether the post is tall or short. So we can change the resistance to in-plane deformations a lot and make an effective shear modulus. And surprisingly, cells are wonderfully sensitive to this. Again, if you take these stem cells and put them on short posts, which mimic in some sense a rigid material, they spread out and this is more than 100 microns across. But if you put them on exactly the same material, it's just that the posts are short, the cells look like this, as though they're sitting on something soft. So this tells us two things. It tells us that the stiffness sensor, whatever it is operating on a bigger than a micron scale, because these cells are all sitting on micron-sized posts, which are 100 kilopascal, and they don't care about that. They're not measuring the stiffness of the post on which they sit. They're measuring whether two adjacent posts can be pulled in plane with respect to each other. They're very sensitive to that. Also, we can print different adhesive areas on taller or short posts and force the cells to have the same shape. So we can make posts, either tall or short posts, and spread the cells on either large areas or soft or small areas, and then do things like measure their stiffness. And if we do measure their stiffness, if we take, for example, in the middle, or if we just look at the cell stiffness as a function of the area of the cell, if the area of the cell is large but the cells are sitting on deformable posts, the cell's own stiffness is soft and it never changes. If we make the posts slightly stiffer, the cell begins to stiffen up in the same area range, and if they become even stiffer, they become even stiffer. So it's the compliance underneath them that the cell cares about. It's not its area. It's not the number of adhesion sites. It's not the number of integrins activated. It has something to do with the lateral force transmission. And the last question has to do with time scale. And Here I show again the stress relaxation of rat brain. The experimental data I showed you before are here, but I took data from MRE, and there's an ultrasound measurement at even higher frequencies. So here on a log scale, the shear modulus gets into several tens of kilopascal, but on a kind of a millisecond sort of time scale, and decays to 100 or so pascal on a tens of seconds time scale. And this is informative in the sense that in the normal brain, presumably neurons are branching well and astrocytes don't spontaneously activate. If the cells were sensing stiffness on a kind of a millisecond time scale, they would sense a very rigid environment, meaning that there'd be an inhibition of neurite branching and there'd be an automatic activation of astrocytes, which we don't see. So that seems to put some kind of limit on how long the cell pulls and integrates information. In order to see the brain as soft enough to branch properly and soft enough not to activate, the cells are seeing something that's in the range of a few hundred pascal. So presumably they're integrating signals on a second time scale or at least in that ballpark in order to decide hard and soft. Okay, so I leave it there. This is just what I showed you. And I think what the largest unanswered questions are of how cells interact with their mechanical environment has to do with these time scales. We still know only a couple of examples in which it's been possible to sort of interrogate how big an area is the cell surveying when it decides if it's in a hard or a soft environment. And that area seems to be surprisingly big. It's not single transmembrane protein size, it's quite big, it's micron sized. And it seems as though they're integrating the signal on at least a second time scale, probably more. And that may give us some hints about the mechanisms that they employ to do this. Okay. Thanks for your attention.